Number 71588, Waldschmidt versus Edge Fitness LLC. And we have Mr. Moynihan for the appellant and Mr. Gibson for the respondent. Mr. Moynihan. Go ahead. And did you want to reserve some time for rebuttal?
I would.
And how much time?
I'd say 5 minutes.
All right, I'll keep it on the clock.
Thank you.
We'll see how we do on that.
Mr. Miley, the short trial judge in this case, made a pretty simple finding. He found that Mr. Waldschmidt signed off on an exculpatory clause within his gym membership that exculpates the gym from liability or injury as a result of negligence or otherwise. Negligence or otherwise.
Since you say that, did it specifically address anything other than negligence? Because that becomes a public policy argument. But you can't necessarily exculpate yourself from gross negligence, intentional conduct. So explain that to me just a little bit.
That's correct. You know, the cases on these areas, when you talk about exculpatory clauses and whether they're invalid as a result of public policy, will say things like, negligence or any other reason, or negligence or otherwise. In this particular clause, it says negligence or otherwise, meaning if you suffer an injury as a result of our negligence or otherwise, which means any other reason, then we're exculpated from liability.
Well, that begs a question then, too. Did you plead anything other than simple negligence?
When you read the complaint is one for negligence and gross negligence. Now, when you read through the complaint, it's a simple complaint, meaning it doesn't have a first cause of action, negligence, second cause of action, gross negligence. But under notice pleading, what you have is the allegation that there's a failure to adequately maintain and inspect the equipment. And as a result of this negligence, injuries were caused. And in the prayer for relief section, we ask for punitive damages that would support that would flow from the gross negligence claim.
And the factual basis behind the gross negligence and the complaint is
what? Would be the failure to inspect and maintain gym membership equipment that is dangerous and that can expose the users of that equipment to injury.
So did you plead knowing and intentionally?
Well, basically what we pled was the failure to inspect and maintain.
Which strikes me as simple negligence.
Well, okay, I don't
mean to chew up your time.
The real issue here is that, as I was saying before, was that Judge Miley made a very simple determination. He said, hey, this exculpatory clause says negligence. Hey, this complaint over here, it says negligence. Therefore, you're precluded from bringing this suit. That's the ruling of Judge Miley. Mm-hmm. And in support, the defense raised cases in other jurisdictions, and I think one in the Nevada federal district court that said that these gym memberships are enforceable. When I look at these things, I find that they should not be enforceable. The reason is because when you sign up for a gym, you are told that you can come on into our gym, our neighborhood gym. It's convenient, nice, clean facility. We got nice, good equipment for you to work out on. You just pay our fee. And, oh, by the way, here's our membership agreement, and it has a exculpatory clause in it. No member of the public reading that exculpatory clause, and this is the real issue in the case, is whether this exculpatory clause can be enforced against the appellant, the plaintiff in the case. No member of the public signing that clause would take that to mean that they can pay their fee, they can come in and use the equipment, and the owner of the gym is completely exculpated from any liability as a result of negligence. That means that the gym can just open its doors on day one and never return to maintain and inspect the
You'd ever have an exculpatory clause that would be enforceable?
Well,
I mean, for all kinds of activities, sporting events, there's you know, these measures are taken to protect themselves, they're enforced routinely.
Here's the problem with this clause and these types of clauses that are found in every single gym membership in this state and across the country, and I've looked. Here's the problem. This isn't a case where, or this isn't a situation, or the clause doesn't touch on situations that the cases talk about whereby a gym, you know, it's a dangerous place. Gyms are a dangerous place. You can injure yourselves in gyms.
So are Little League football teams.
But wait, this isn't a case where you overexert yourself and you pull a muscle, or you're lifting too much weight on the weight bench and it falls on your chest and injures you. This is a exculpatory clause that relieves the gym owners of any liability from the failure to inspect or maintain their equipment. They can keep equipment in a dangerous condition and somebody can be injured and they're completely exculpated from any liability as a result of that type of negligence. It's kind of, and what's the extension? And this is what the court should be concerned about. What's the extension of this? Where else can this go? This isn't a situation where two peewee football players are banging up against each other and somebody gets injured. This is a case where you can have exculpatory clauses, as they are in gym memberships, for any service or activity or business that eviscerates the tort system. That is, if you open up your business for a specific purpose to the general public, you have a duty to act reasonably to keep your premises in a reasonably safe condition. These exculpatory clauses, in the way that they are sometimes enforced by the courts across this country, completely eviscerate the duty to keep your premises and your business in a reasonably safe condition. Where does that extend to? That extends to when you purchase a vehicle and the sales contract in the vehicle says, we're exculpated for our negligence in making this vehicle. And then when somebody rear-ends it and the gas tank explodes, well, we're exculpated. What about if you go to a NASCAR event and there's a big crash in front of the stands and a vehicle goes in the stands and kills a whole section of people? The exculpation clause in the ticket or online when you purchase your ticket, that could shield the NASCAR and the Speedway from any liability to erect reasonably safe barriers and put up that reasonably safe fence over the spectators. Kind of like when you go to your local grocery store and you're a member of their value club and you get discounts from groceries, and part of that agreement is you're exculpating the grocery store from its negligence in failing to maintain the premises. That's where this is going. And so no member of the public would sign this exculpation or exculpatory clause and believe it to mean that the gym membership that they told has great equipment is that the gym is not has no duty to properly inspect, maintain, and make sure that that gym membership is safe. That's good.
Let me ask you this. The judge in the order specifically pointed to the language of the exculpatory clause and found it not to be ambiguous, found it to be clear on its face, and enforceable. Tell me where you see an ambiguity here, looking at the language of the clause itself.
Well, looking at the language of the clause itself, here's what my big problem with the clause is itself. And there's an affidavit from the appellant which says that he didn't realize that the clause would mean that they're exculpated from liability and, number one, making sure that the equipment is safe, and number two, maintaining and inspecting. The issue that I have is a public policy issue in these exculpatory clauses that shield the owner from any type of negligence, and the effect that that has on our tort system, our business system, our free market system, and public policy.
Tell me why that's different. Again, I keep going back to this, but I can't reconcile it. And even if you're going horseback riding, a guided tour, those always contain exculpatory clauses. What would be the difference there?
The difference there would be...
you didn't feed your horse in the morning and it's cranky that day.
Or it's a wild horse, or it's a dangerous horse, and you put a child on that big, dangerous horse, and that horse does what big, dangerous horses do and throws the child off, and you have given that member of the public a dangerous horse.
But again, on a public policy argument, if it's a dangerous horse, you know it's a dangerous horse. That's more intentional knowing than I said this.
But here's the problem, though.
And again, don't chew up your time.
No. But this is the issue. What you're talking about is the issue in this case. And the issue is, on a public policy standpoint, are we going to allow these contracts and these exculpatory clauses to be enforceable? What business is doing in this case is it is the entity or the person who is in the best position to provide a reasonably safe condition for its customers.
Tell me what analysis you're using to determine whether or not this is violative of public policy and what Nevada law supports that. I know the respondents in this case are looking to the restatement of contracts, I think Section 195, and urging us to adopt something like that and analyzing whether or not an exculpatory clause is against public policy.
Well, sure. Number one is our Supreme Court has held that a person who is contracting to enter into one of these clauses must appreciate what he is exculpating the drafter from. And in this case, there's evidence that the appellant did not realize. He realized that there was negligence written in there, but he did not know that that would alleviate the business owner from adequately maintaining and inspecting the equipment.
But then going back to the agreement that he signed, indemnify, hold harmless with respect to any and all injury, whether arising from the negligence of the respondent, that may arise out of or in connection with my use of any of the equipment. And he may not have realized it, but that's what it says, and it doesn't look ambiguous.
And furthermore, what the public policy aspect of it is the broadness of the clause itself, in that the clause exculpates the gym owner from any liability as a result of negligence or otherwise, meaning that includes gross negligence, that includes intentional torts.
Why didn't they go after the equipment person, the manufacturer of the equipment, and make it a products liability case?
Well, the issue is that the gym is where he was injured. The gym is the one that supplied him with this equipment. The gym is the one that said, well, this is great equipment for you to work out on. Come join our gym.
Did they really say that? Where do we find that? This is great equipment. Come work out.
Well, number one, they did sell him on joining this gym. But that's beside the point of what the issue is in this case, and it's whether the clause itself is enforceable. That's what Mr. Miley, the short trial judge, ruled on.
You only have a minute and a half left. You want to save that?
I chewed up quite a bit of that.
And that's fine, because I made the point, and that's the issue here, is whether the... Because, look, it's up to the court. It's up to the court to decide whether it is going to enforce these types of clauses and shift the cost of doing business to the general public. The business owner is in the best position to provide a reasonably safe environment, and these clauses eviscerate that duty. There is no longer a duty. And the extension of this is that these clauses can go to every single contract in which you have a business and a member of the public. Just like I said, where does it extend? So what the court has to decide is whether it's going to allow the enforceability of these gym membership contracts to the point where You cannot maintain equipment and you cannot inspect equipment and then be completely relieved of any duty to do so.
Was that the evidence? That they did not maintain or inspect that? Is the evidence that unambiguously that, was it conceded that the machine failed? This is a user error? Is it a machine failure that they don't, you know?
So what one thing that I want to make clear in this case is Judge Miley made a very simple determination. He made a determination that contract says this, complaint says this, we're done. He did not rule on issues of fact with respect to whether the, and I'll finish my point and then, but he did not make specific findings on whether there were issues of fact because he was done with stage one of his analysis. And that's what is before the court now, is whether he made the right determination and just the blanket enforcement of that clause right away. Clause says this, contract says this, we're done. And that's really the issue before the court.
Thank you. I'll give you a minute in rebuttal. Also, the record should reflect that the judge, Judge Miley, is not District Judge Miley, Stephanie Miley, but Randy Miley, sheriff trial judge. So the record's clear as to who granted the summary judgment, and then there was Judge Alpha affirmed his granting. Record's clear.
Go ahead.
Good morning, Your Honors. Keith Gibson on behalf of Respondent Edge Fitness, LLC. Simply put, the district court did not err when it enforced the unambiguous exculpatory clause contained within Edge Fitness's membership agreement, which was expressly agreed to by the plaintiff.
Do you read that exculpatory clause in a way similar to appellant, in that it would relieve your client from gross negligence or even willful intentional misconduct?
Absolutely not, Your Honor.
The clause
specifically says, regarding to the negligence of the releasees, furthermore, the case law is clear, and not just in Nevada, and pretty much nationwide, that the only thing that an exculpatory clause can release is negligence. You cannot release willful misconduct. You cannot release willful gross negligence. You cannot release strict liability.
And
you
I can't guess release what any of those. Opposing counsel is looking at is the language indicating releasing Edge Fitness with respect to any and all injury, disabilities, death, loss, or damage, whether arising from negligence of the releasees or otherwise. So you don't read that to say otherwise liability speaking.
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
I read that as entirely dealing with negligence. That's the only cause of action that is addressed. And to answer this court's question to appellant's counsel earlier, you asked if the complaint has any allegations that address gross negligence or willful misconduct. The answer is no.
And it just affects equipment, nothing else but equipment.
If
there's water on the floor and you slip, you've got a case against the club.
I believe that as the release is written, that's what it contemplates, Your Honor. Because if you look at the first clause of the release, it says, I understand the risk of injury from club activities, and using any club equipment is significant, including the potential for permanent paralysis and death.
Well, wait, let me make sure you answered my question correctly. If you slip on water that they didn't, in other words, you say the front desk, hey, there's water on the floor, and they don't do anything, is that covered by this clause?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. And I think that borderline crawls into that category of gross negligence, because you're talking, you know, if you were told of something that, hey, there's water on the floor, and you need that, this is dangerous, so someone can clean it up, and they basically, you know, front desk person, for whatever reason, just sits there and twiddles their thumbs and does absolutely nothing in response.
Knowledge-based, not simple negligence.
Yeah, so you're talking an intentional decision not to clean it up. That's willful misconduct.
I don't think so. But
go ahead.
I think that falls under that. It certainly dances that line, and I think that would be an issue of, that would certainly get closer to the police presenting that issue to the jury.
What I'm trying to do is say that this is really a limited exculpatory clause. It affects, we're talking about equipment. I go to the club when I'm in Las Vegas. I always go to the athletic club and do the equipment. And that's all I expect. If I get hurt with the equipment, I either got to do a products liability case or have something other than the equipment hurt me.
If you look further in clause, and I'm being forthright with the court, it does talk about otherwise it may arise out of in connection or use of any of the equipment or facilities of the club. it does, at the bottom, it does have that broader language just to be forthright with the court. That being said, that's not the issue before this court. The issue that is squarely before this court was plaintiff claims he was injured while using equipment. He was told the equipment could cause him injury. He was told the equipment could cause paralysis. He was told that there's a risk of injury by using our facility and our equipment.
If the drafter overdrafted this, then it's void against public policy.
I disagree, Your Honor, because unlike some of the cases that plaintiff referenced for the state of Wisconsin, those other cases don't contain severability clauses. And underneath the initial clause, which is cited, it's on page 9 of the brief, of respondent's brief, which says, I expressly agree that the release is intended to be as broad and as conclusive as permitted by applicable law. In other words, it's only as broad as as the law allows. Unlike the Wisconsin case that plaintiff cited cited in his reply brief, that case and that specific Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals talked about in that case where it says there's no severability clause. So therefore, you don't have a choice. We have to take the clause as written. Because of the severability clause, it says, look, I can only enforce this to the extent the court's going to enforce it. And that's saying, which, based on this court's previous case law, is negligence. If you go nationwide, it's pretty consistent. It's negligence only. Now, I will point out that the case is relied upon by the appellant in his reply brief from Wisconsin. One of the things that's an important note, and it's kind of early on in the opinion, it says this court, being the Wisconsin court, Supreme Court, has never upheld an exculpatory clause over 25 years. So to say that Wisconsin disfavors exculpatory clauses is, frankly, a misstatement. They absolutely abhor them, Your Honor, and they refuse to enforce them. Because over 25 years, they've never enforced one. That's to show that that's what their status is. That is not the law in the state of Nevada, where this court has enforced exculpatory clauses. And this exculpatory clause, as far as what we're dealing with in the facts of this case, we're dealing with the use of equipment. Plaintiff was using the equipment when the sled weight dropped on his knees. Now, what plaintiff talks about in his brief, and he self-servingly talks about that affidavit, there's no evidence of any failure to maintain. There's no evidence of a defect. There's no evidence of, frankly, of a malfunction. I can tell you that there's a video that shows the incident, and what it actually shows is that the plaintiff himself improperly latched the device.
That's not part of this record, right?
That is correct. It's not.
Okay, so let's not.
But he, however, uses his self-serving statement that there's a malfunction, but there's no evidence of a malfunction, Your Honor. And that's what I'm talking about, as far as in the record.
This was strictly looking at the language of the exculpatory clause in the summary judgment, so that's kind of irrelevant.
But he uses that as, appellant uses that as a basis to create an issue of fact. In other words, he's saying, this clause isn't enforceable because I didn't know that I would be using equipment that can malfunction. And he's trying to use the subjective standard that this court announced in the Renaud case. And that decision, I'll call it their carve-out with his subjective intent, is not what's applicable in this case because there is no evidence of a malfunction, and I don't think you get to, I didn't know it was going to malfunction, so therefore this clause is too broad. There's no evidence to support there's a disconnect there, and that's what I'm trying to point out to the court, and that he's trying to use his subjective knowledge as a means of bypassing the exculpatory language.
Let me ask you this. Focusing on the public policy aspect here, you're urging us to look at the restatement second to create this analysis of whether or not something's against public policy.
Correct. And I think, I personally don't believe that the exculpatory clauses are detrimental to public policy. I completely disagree with the appellant and that counsel in that regard. And the reason being is these clauses serve a very specific purpose. They provide a company or an entity, whatever it is, that is putting on an event, doing whatever, an ability to potentially control their liability. Now, that seems kind of harsh in some regards. However, it's not harsh when you think about, when we go to buy insurance, this is how much our insurance costs because they're the amount of premiums for claims that potentially cover all negligence claims versus, our regular negligence is excluded. However, gross negligence, willful misconduct, that totally changes the cost of insurance. So that enables companies to actually potentially obtain insurance when they may have not been able to. For one mechanism. Additionally, I think that there's public policy reasons for enforcing this because it's ultimately the freedom of contract. Parties are freely allowed to enter contract. Plaintiff didn't have to sign. I tend to use plaintiff and appellant interchangeably for the purpose. The appellant, when he signed it, he acknowledged he read it, he acknowledged he knew what he was doing, and he acknowledged the risk he was taking. And there's a public policy behind that because that's what our society is based upon. It's based upon contracts. Every one of you I've seen has a cell phone. That's based upon a contract. You have a cable. You probably have cable or some type of, streaming device. That's based on contract. All of our society today is pretty much based upon contracts. And this is about two parties freely entering into a contract. Plaintiff, at the time he joined our membership, was a member of a different gym. And even testified, he continued to go to that other gym. He also joined this gym because it just happened to be closer to his house. He also testified that there's one right across the street as well. So he had multiple different gyms to choose from where to go. There's nothing saying, hey, you have to join our gym. If you don't like our exculpatory clause, you can go across the street. And that's what the marketplace is. And to answer plaintiff's question of, well, they could just, my client could just open their business, not have anyone on staff, never do anything to maintain their equipment or whatnot, that's not going to happen because if they do that, people will know. It's like, hey, no one's ever there. It's not a safe business. They don't take care of this stuff. And the marketplace will basically eliminate that business. And that's part of, because it's word of mouth. And that's how people find out about all kinds of things. And the marketplace will fix that because people want to work out in a safe environment. Edge Fitness is kind of a boutique business. It's a smaller gym. It's not like your 24-hour fitness. It's not your Lifetime Fitness that has hundreds, 200s, or LVAC that has multiple hundreds of people probably using the gym at any moment in time. You're probably going to have a situation where maybe on a busy time you're talking about 15, 20 people. So you have a much different clientele that wants to go work out in that environment. And these type of exculpatory clauses enable my client to actually function and have a business and to actually do what he's claiming. As far as providing a business and providing equipment, all the equipment was new. You didn't hear plaintiff talk about how there was ever any malfunction of the equipment before this incident or that there was a malfunction after this incident. Plaintiff never sought any type of 56F relief to ask for more discovery to establish that there was a malfunction as far as in their opposition. There's no evidence of any expert to support that the machine malfunctioned except for this whole testimony is basically plaintiff saying, hey, this machine malfunctioned. And that's frankly, ultimately this is negligence. And at some point, it does require expert testimony to prove causation.
Right. But again, this was summary judgment, correct?
Correct.
What was attached to the summary judgment motion? All of this stuff that you're talking about, because it sounds like
it was argued in the briefs. It was argued, and it's the testimony, the full deposition transcript was attached as an exhibit to the motion for summary judgment. Specific things were highlighted, but within the actual argument itself, Your Honor, I pointed out the fact that plaintiff had worked out at other gyms and he belonged at other gyms, and he worked it up, and he understood this. He didn't have to choose this gym, and that this is a voluntary activity, and I think that exculpatory clauses should be enforced. Do I believe that they should exclude strict liability, gross misconduct, willful recklessness? Absolutely not, because I think that's too broad and that would encourage the type of things that plaintiff is talking about. What negligence really is kind of I should have done something different than I actually did. That's ultimately what it is. It's the Monday morning quarterback of I would have, could have, should have. And hindsight, unfortunately, most of the time is 20/20. Certainly been in that case in my life, and certainly probably in the case of this in this situation where the actual incident occurred. I should also point out that we are talking about the granting of summary judgment. We're not talking about a motion to dismiss. This wasn't done at the 12B5 stage right after the complaint was filed. The case went to arbitration. The arbitrator found on behalf of Edge Fitness. Plaintiff filed a de novo. Case went through more additional discovery, and it was after additional discovery that the summary judgment was granted. Granted, it was based upon the contract and it was based on the clause, which plaintiff, and it says, I have read the release and liability assumptions of risk, And I fully understand this term, and I understand I've given up substantial rights by signing it, and sign it freely, voluntarily, without any inducement. He freely signed it. He didn't sign it. He actually signed it, and it looks like he kind of signed it three times in that same spot. His handwriting is kind of difficult to read. But I think that that's what we're looking at. I think it should be enforced. It's sufficiently clear. It's ambiguous. And it has to spell out the dangers with greatest particularity. Well, I don't know what's greater than saying, you understand that by using our equipment, there's a risk of injury. And by the way, that risk of injury can include death or paralysis. It doesn't get much bigger than that. I mean, what other harm can you warn him of? It's like, hey, you're using our equipment. There's a risk that you could be seriously injured using our equipment. That's a risk you take. And at some point, you know, I do believe that personal responsibility also has to come into this, and that you have to take care of yourself as well. And just as he freely and voluntarily, entered into the contract, his conduct and his responsibility matters. And, you know, I was taught a long time ago that I'm the ultimate safety person and responsible for my safekeeping. If the equipment's not safe, if he thinks it's not safe, you shouldn't have used it. I also tell you, on the day of the incident, he used it two times. I believe he did two sets before the actual incident occurred. So he knowingly used the equipment. He was the last person to use the equipment before the incident. He was the only person who was sitting down when the equipment, when the weight dropped on his knees. The only evidence that really is frankly supported appears to show user error.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your time. Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Moynihan, you have 1 minute. What would you like to say in 1 minute?
And the issue is whether Judge Miley was correct in just preliminarily just looking at this clause, looking at the complaint, and we're done. And that's really the issue. He didn't make a factual determination on the question of the fact. The next thing is, and really what this is the clause is too broad. And, you know, if you look at some of these cases that uphold these clauses across the nation, they'll say, well, you could have gone to another gym. You didn't have to sign this agreement. You could have just gone down the street and used their gym. Well, these clauses are in every single gym membership agreement. You can't go into a gym and use it without signing one of these agreements. The court, in upholding these agreements, is encouraging these types of agreements and businesses using these types of agreements.
Well, that gets into an adhesion analysis, which isn't part of this case.
Well, here's the big issue. What the court would be doing in agreeing to this is allowing businesses to shift the burden to the general public, to their insurance companies, ultimately to the state. And that's what this court needs to be concerned about.
Thank you. This matter.